And welcome to the second episode of the 7500 to Holt podcast with Kirsten Schlewitz.
Hey, everyone.
Gareth Simpson.
Hey, what's up?
Andrew Cieslak.
Hello.
And your host, me, Robert Lintott. We'll be trying to check in on the aftermath of the Manchester City debacle this weekend, talking a little bit about the foreign owners who want to end relegation, looking at Liverpool's proposed TV deal. We've got a new feature from Gareth this week that hopefully will be a recurring feature. And finally, we'll wrap it up with a little bit of talk about the upcoming West Brom match this weekend. So let's start it off, guys. Man City, what'd you think? I can tell from that noise that it's just overwhelming joy.
Wow.
There was literally nothing about it that surprised me. Like,
no.
It was predictable. It was what I expected from matching our squad up against Manchester City's squad. It's what I expected Alex McLeish would do, by which I mean not. Like, were we even interested in trying to score? Like, it just seemed like we were just cowering and hoping they wouldn't absolutely murder us.
I remember in the beginning of the match, Gabby had a shot. I think he had a pretty decent run on net, and he didn't score, but it was still 0-0 at that point. And I'm like, well, that was kind of surprising. Maybe we can make something off that. But the game was kind of over once they decided to put Heskey out wide. I mean, that was awful. He was terrible. And I don't even hate Heskey, but that was like the worst thing.
But he's not a winger. Like,
he's not.
And we have wingers. We have them on the bench. And that's what I don't understand.
Right.
Well, I can tell you, since I had to miss the game and I didn't get to see it, from the perspective of someone just coming to it and reading the scoreline, the least surprising scoreline I've ever seen. We went out to lunch in the middle of this conference, and there happened to be a nice big screen TV, and they pulled up the Villa highlights, and I got excited for all of 5 seconds until they started showing the goals.
Hey, we were the first team to score at whatever that stadium's called now.
United Stadium.
Okay.
Isn't that what it means? Etihad? Doesn't that mean United?
Does it?
I hope so.
I feel like I read this when they first named it.
Yeah.
That's so badass if that's true. Wow. Stephen Warnock had the first goal of the year in Premier League at Manchester City. So that if anyone had that, they would have been very rich.
I hope someone did.
I would say that was the one thing that surprised me, is that we did score and that it was Stephen Warnock who scored a goal.
And it wasn't even like – it was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool goal. I mean, it wasn't like just, you know.
It was decent. There was some decent attacking Warnock in that game, and up until that mistake that led to the goal, I was actually feeling pretty good about him.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking too. Like, Warnock's actually having a pretty good game, and then all of a sudden, whoopsie, yeah. Warnock. But then he scored, so kind of evened it out.
All right, so fill in a guy who didn't get to see it. Who's each of your man of the match for this one?
Everybody seemed to be pretty happy with Clark. That's probably a good pick.
I have no issues with, I mean, if Clark is coming up behind Collins and Collins really is going to be asking for a lot more money in his contract negotiations, he's going to have very little ground to stand on, I think, because he's probably the best we've got in terms of players coming up looking to challenge an established player, I would think.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why Kieran Clark shouldn't be starting regularly at this point. Like, Collins is fine, but he's not remarkable. And I don't know, Clark is young and he's an academy product, and so we might as well give him a run in the side until he proves that he's not ready.
I agree. I guess Gabby was all right. I think Heskey was the worst, if we're having the worst man of the match. Just because he was kind of out of luck he was out of position to begin with, but I don't know if they didn't start Bannon because he's kind of knocked up or if he's just tired or I don't know, or just stupid. Did anyone see any post-game commentary that might have explained why Bannon didn't start?
I saw no reason for him to not start. And if he was banged up, why did they put him on the bench to start it all off and, you know, bring him into the game? So if they even say he was banged up, I don't buy it as an excuse.
It just seemed too coincidental to me that it was like, okay, this is the first time Heskey can come back, so suddenly Bannon's on the bench, even though he's been, if not the best player, one of the two best players for our last two games. It made no sense to me. And the Billet journalists that were covering the game were absolutely stunned by it as well.
And I know Inzaghi has struggled, but you got to let him play through this. I mean, what the hell else? If the other option is putting Heskey out there, I mean, forget it. I'd rather have an out-of-form Inzaghi out there than the best Heskey you could possibly find. I'd like to see him in there, even if he's hasn't figured it all out yet.
I agree, because how is he going to figure it out?
Right.
Yeah, I think at this point, I struggle to see any plausible reason for people like Emil Heskey and Steven Ireland to be starting games, except, of course, injury.
Yeah, I forgot about him, just like everybody else. Yes. He's invisible when he plays. He's literally just not even there. I don't understand how he could have been so promising and be so worthless at this point.
It's hard to think of any other parallels, too. I mean, I can't think of any player who was so good and then nothing or less than nothing. He's a negative impact on the team.
Well, and you can't even blame it on a manager. It's been a series of managers that he's been just depressingly bad for.
He is depressing. That's a good word for it. He's depressing to look at. I don't want to look at him anymore.
And, of course, Milner scored.
What? Yeah, the Milner goal.
Oh,
I think
yes.
We talk about that for a second. Yeah, first, it was nice.
Always gonna happen. That was always going to happen.
Right. And they talked about it for about 20 minutes after it happened.
Yeah.
Didn't City score and then Fox Soccer kept talking about the Milner goal?
Yes.
Yeah. It was...
Yes, they did. And it was nice. I mean, it certainly wasn't the best goal of all time. It was nice. The big thing was, I guess, about people were excited because he didn't rub it in, which I don't care about. I don't know if anybody else does.
I was impressed by him not doing that, especially since it was at City and not at Villa Park. I can imagine him not celebrating at Villa Park, but...
Yeah, and it's remarkable, especially when you consider it's not like he was a Villa product. We bought him from Newcastle, I think. And, like, so we had him for the first of his good years, basically.
Sure.
Like, he didn't really owe Villa anything.
No, and he didn't leave on particularly bad terms either. I mean, he was classy the whole time. So, you know, it wasn't like the Downing thing by any means.
True.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot of people saying, you know, it's great that he didn't rub it in, but I was kind of surprised because he would have no reason to. It's not like we booted him out or did anything bad. There's no bad blood. So, I mean, well, yeah, he should get some credit for being classy. I didn't feel like it was out of the ordinary classiness.
I'm just curious as to why he didn't celebrate at all. I mean, as was said, he wasn't a product of Villa, so why does he care that much to not demonstrate it?
A common sort of courtesy or whatever. Like, I bet Darren Bent wouldn't celebrate against Sunderland. You just don't celebrate against your former teams, I guess.
I guess we'll find out when Ashley Young scores a hat-trick against us later on this year.
Oof.
I don't think it's possible for Ashley Young not to celebrate a goal in just the most arrogant, self-aggrandizing
way
possible.
It's going to be bad. I'm going to break my TV, I'm pretty sure. When this happens.
You guys realize Downing doesn't celebrate against us because...
Oh, man.
if he scores at Villa Park, I can see people actually attempting to climb out of the stands and attack him.
I hope he celebrates by committing seppuku. Just screw that guy. I've become so bitter about him.
You should burn your kit. I hear that's popular.
Fortunately, I don't think he's actually playing that well, so I don't imagine he's going to score. Or I don't think he's even really created that many goals for Liverpool so far this year. He's not had an especially good season.
Good. Sorry, I'm better too.
That is going to be really interesting when they come to Villa Park. That game is going to be extremely intense. I would love to be there just to see what the
atmosphere will be intense. The game itself will probably not be particularly intense. We will, I would imagine, lose.
Yes.
Yeah.
In a relatively unspectacular way.
Yeah. Hopefully Ian Dark's not there to call it. Otherwise, I'll be really pissed.
God. All right. Well, do we have any final thoughts on Man City, or do we all just want to forget that it ever happened?
Pretty much that.
I feel like Balotelli, I feel like I need to mention that, since we're talking about Manchester City. And even though he was totally winding up the Villa fans, I kind of loved it.
Wow.
I don't get the draw of Balotelli. Everyone agrees that he's a D-bag, and yet everyone seems to kind of love him.
I absolutely love him for it. It's fantastic. He's got a personality, and he's obviously insane.
It's good for the game for him to be around. I mean, he's nuts, and he's interesting, and he's really good.
Yeah, so. That's the best. It's the best if you have someone who is absolutely nuts and incredibly talented at the same time.
He had that shot from distance that kind of bounced right before given, and he managed to keep it out, but it was just out of nowhere, and it was filthy, and it definitely probably should have gone in. I mean, he easily could have had a couple more goals. He's unbelievable.
But yeah. I'm intrigued with the one of the greatest players in the world who's also nuts. We hate him with Ronaldo. So why do we hate him and not Balotelli?
I think he's more arrogant than nuts.
Yeah, I don't think he's nuts. He's completely polished. He doesn't do a misstep. I don't think he would take out his rage on. He doesn't get sent off or anything like that. Balotelli, you honestly have no idea what he's going to do.
Yeah, I mean, he might punch Mancini one day. He could do anything. He's capable of anything that you could think of. I don't really hate Ronaldo, though, I guess. I don't know why I should.
No, neither do I. I have a hard time hating, yeah.
Fair enough. All right, well, let's leave Man City behind and hope the team does the same thing.
Yeah.
But for now, let's talk about the other huge news of the day, the report that certain foreign owners who are, as thus far unnamed, want to do away with relegation. Are we all in agreement that this is the stupidest thing ever?
Well, for now, until we get to Gareth's piece on who is the stupidest thing ever.
It is among the stupidest things that have happened recently. I think that's where I'd rank it.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but to me, one of the biggest draws of international soccer is relegation and promotion. I mean, I totally understand it would never work, but it's something that I would love to see in, like, American baseball. Right? I mean, yeah, if you could get promoted from AAA to Major League, it would be so amazing because it adds drama at both ends of the table. And if you take it away,
it's that ingrained thing. That's how it started. That's just how it is. Like, it's not something I think you can just kind of put in the middle of some established, you know, huge structure. But that's the point, right? Why go changing that? Like, it's nonsense. I don't know. I didn't mean to cut you off, but
it's all right. You're totally right.
And it would be cool, but it's the same thing for people arguing for it in MLS. It just doesn't make any sense at all. What are you going to do? Like play at a high school? Like Aaron said today on Twitter, he's like, yeah. So like you're going to play at these smaller clubs. They play in like gymnasiums or whatever. It's just it doesn't make any sense.
I would have two major concerns with this obviously insane idea. My first one would be that in the Premier League itself, basically the only drama when it comes to the final month or so of the season, as we saw last year, was the relegation battle. I mean, Manchester United was presumptively going to win the title for basically the entire spring, but the relegation fight went down to the wire. And so if you don't have relegation anymore, then well, what motivation is there for anyone to watch the Premier League in March or April or whatever? And then obviously the second problem, is particularly in England, is that there's a structure. I mean, there are a whole bunch of really well-supported and like regionally important clubs in the Championship and in League One. And sealing off the Premier League would absolutely kill them when they're already working from a financial disadvantage.
The biggest question I have about this is how do we decide which 20 teams get to stay in the Premier League? Because hate them as we might, do we really think Birmingham is a championship side, or do we think they're probably more of an EPL side? And how do you justify putting them? Yeah, exactly. And how do you justify pulling them up to the EPL when they're currently in the championship?
And I would think that they would want Wigan kicked out of the champion of the EPL because no one thinks that they're really supposed to be in the Premier League. So what do you do if Wigan actually does finish above the relegation zone and they're there? You say, sorry, you just don't have the historical record. Go back to the championship.
Right. I mean, at this point, yeah. What are they going to do? Institute some kind of BCS for England? I mean, it's just dumb. It doesn't. There's no possible way to pull this off.
And I think you bring up a great point with Wigan, Kirsten, because it's, you know, they don't belong in the EPL, and yet that's where they've been, and that's surprising and dramatic and fun to watch every single season that they're up. And if we get rid of them, we lose that element of, holy crap, why is this team here and how are they doing it?
Yeah, and then you also lose the interesting element of, like, last season when everybody was paying attention to what's them called? Oh, good. My brain is freezing. Blackpool. There we go. At the beginning of the season, because no one else was playing like that. And it was just something fresh, new blood in the Premier League. And that's why we watch, to get that sort of differentness, I think. And I think that if it was closed off and it was just the same 20 teams, then England would be even more insular and no new styles would be coming at the same rate as it is in other football leagues.
I mean, aren't we headed towards a super league anyway, a European super league, like something out of Pro Evolution Soccer, where you just have 20 of the best teams in all European competition playing in their own circle jerk? I mean, what is that really where this is going? Is that the point here?
That would be a good name for the league, though.
The European circle jerk?
That's pretty much it.
It's what it is, right?
Wow. Can we see any pros to getting rid of relegation? I mean, we should try to be vaguely fair here.
Aston Villa would not get relegated.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I could see it helping attract higher caliber players to England. Because if you go to a team that has no chance of getting relegated, you know you will always be playing top flight football.
But how much of a problem does that have in England in general? I mean, it's got a problem with the top and with the bottom 10 teams or so, probably the bottom 15.
I think the majority of international transfers don't happen for the cachet of the Premier League. The cachet is with the Champions League. I don't think with this sealed league we're going to be any more likely to attract talent if we're still not playing in Europe.
Yeah, that's what everyone wants. They want European football, and that doesn't mean the Europa League.
Huh. Right.
Do you think it would even the playing field at all, though? Because if you have a team, if you're an owner and you have no chance of relegation, are you going to be more likely to invest more money into your team?
Or less.
That's what I was going to say. I would think less.
And that's a great point.
Yeah, what's the point? You can just try to reap some money off the idiot fans who keep showing up, and you don't have to go ahead and buy expensive players anymore because you're not going anywhere. You'll get the TV money. You'll get, you know, all that stuff, and you're going to get a decent sponsorship because you're going to be on TV, and you don't have to worry about paying good players anymore.
Would we really have Darren Bent if there wasn't the fear at the end of December last season that Villa could go down?
No, but
not at all.
Isn't his like 2-year rental period almost up? He's got to go to a different club soon, doesn't he?
I'm sure we'll start hearing about that in January.
Looking forward to it.
Well, along with the big foreign owners thing, the most notorious foreign owners, the Red Sox guys, as well as LeBron James, as we all found out this weekend, Liverpool, they want their own TV deal for overseas. And I'm not even sure what to think of this. What do you guys think here?
Now, is it that they want their own Premier League deal, or is it that they think that every team in the Premier League should be allowed to negotiate their own deal?
I think they think that they should be allowed to opt out of the Premier League's foreign TV rights deal and negotiate their own, because they think they'll be able to get a whole lot more money if they're not sort of operating on the same playing level as Bolton, because I think, as the quote was, there's not a whole lot of Bolton fans in Kuala Lumpur, when in fact there's a significant number, I guess, a lot of Liverpool fans over in East Asia.
You would think that QPR would have the Kuala Lumpur support. They're owned by a Malaysian conglomerate or something, but apparently not.
Well,
that's not your geography.
Yeah, maybe if there was no promotion or relegation and the folks in Kuala Lumpur weren't worried about QPR getting relegated, yeah, they could tie their hopes up with their countrymen, but I imagine they're They're looking for bigger fish.
It's pretty unbelievably arrogant for this guy to go ahead and assume that if you're in Kuala Lumpur or wherever, that you essentially don't even want the option of choosing a different team. You basically only want to choose Liverpool, Man United, Chelsea, or Arsenal. You don't even get the right anymore because this guy thinks that you're not interested. That's
realistically though, if you're a sort of foreign football fan just coming to the Premier League, you're not going to choose Bolton. I think like we're almost somehow the exception because we picked Aston Villa. I would imagine most American Canadian soccer fans, are fans of a big four team.
You're right. I mean, everybody. If you meet a person randomly and you find out they're into soccer and you ask them who they support in England if they have one, you're pretty much expecting to hear one of those teams probably. You guys have met people, obviously, right? That's usually the case.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard them answer back Aston Villa.
No.
I mean, look at the fact that, you know, Nike makes our kits, and I challenge you to find a place in the United States where you could go buy an Aston Villa kit.
Yeah, you definitely can't.
Possibly at the New York Nike store.
Yeah, you might be able to, but, I mean, if you go and look at Nike's page,
you've
got to hunt for it.
I know you can't get them in our Nike store, and I've been to the one in San Francisco. They don't have them there. So, they only sell like three or four different teams, though. I mean, they sell a couple national teams in Barcelona and Man United, Arsenal. That's pretty much it. But the deck is stacked against everyone else in every possible way. And that's basically the theme of all these news stories this week. Just getting worse.
And it certainly would be if the Liverpool owners get their way. Even worse.
Yeah.
It's worth mentioning, though, I don't mind that people aren't buying Aston Villa kits considering how hideous they are. But I feel like I didn't say that.
True, but I wouldn't mind if I could get, like, the Aston Villa toothbrush or something over here. Or whatever else was on that list of bizarre Villa gifts that we could get.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's – I don't know. But then, you know, part of me says, what if Aston Villa had their own TV rights package and we could finally legally buy an online package that would give us all the Villa we wanted?
I don't know. How much Villa do you really want?
Asking the question that we're all thinking.
I'd be able to make sure I can see their match every week, but other than that, I honestly don't give a shit what Gabriel Agbonlahor has to say about pretty much anything. This is leading pretty well into our next segment, by the way.
Yes, it is. This is a perfect segue. Why don't we kick it off?
Yeah. Why don't we go there? So speaking of Gabriel Agbonlahor and not giving a shit what anyone on our team thinks, last week Stylian Petrov told the media that Gabriel Agbonlahor has the ability to be as good as Ronaldo. So with that, we're going to bring it to our new segment in which Gareth tells us who the dumbest man in the world is. Gareth?
Well, I feel like you're leading me into saying either Gabriel Agbonlahor or Stylian Petrov is the dumbest man in the world. But in fact, Stylian Petrov is the dumbest man in the world because let's think about it. Gabriel Agbonlahor and Ronaldo, I mean, they have a few things in common. I will grant you that. They are baldish. Agbonlahor looks like he could be a bit chubby if he let himself go. They're strikers. They can run really fast.
A level of arrogance, I would think.
They're the same shade of tan-ish.
Sure.
Same number of syllables in their names.
True. Have won the same amount of Champions League trophies. but that's about it. I have sincere doubts, and I guess I'm thankful that Agbonlahor is not about to be bought by Real Madrid. But I don't know. Every time I hear Stylian Petrov say something, which is a disturbing frequency, it's always just the dumbest thing in the world. Like, didn't we talk last time we were on the podcast? Didn't Stylian Petrov had said something else, right? Like, I don't know. Is he even still our captain? Why are people talking to him?
I believe he is technically still our captain just because we never notice him on the field.
He scored that goal and he claimed he's reveling in his attacking role.
Okay, so he
just. Holy shit.
Right? That's just what he does. He takes long-range shots and says dumb shit to people.
And he wears the armband.
Yeah, one of his dumbass shots went in, and now he's claiming that he's reveling in his attacking role. You've been taking those stupid shots since ever. And one went in, and now you're the attacker of the – what an idiot.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, okay. In the absence of – I used to think that – shit, I'm forgetting his name. The caretaker manager last year, Gary McDonald. It was a mess. McAllister.
Kevin McDonald.
No, that – Gary.
Oh, Gary McAllister.
Yeah, we had both of them at one point, but
yes,
continue.
Yeah. I never thought Kevin McDonald was that stupid, though. I thought he was in over his head. I thought Gary McAllister was legitimately the most stupid person who was currently working for Aston Villa. Just because, I mean, look at his face. He just looks like a dumb person. But at the moment, based on exclusively, if necessary, based on saying that Gabriel Iván Lahore is like Ronaldo, Kilian Petrov is the dumbest human in the world.
At least for this week.
Stay tuned for the next podcast where Garrett's next stupidest person in the world. He's assured us, folks, that he'll have one every time we want one.
Hopefully it will never be one of three of us.
You know, I'd be willing to put up with it. But are you allowed to repeat, Gareth? I'm wondering about this.
If absolutely necessary. I have a few people in mind who could probably be repeat visitors.
All right.
Is one of them Petrov?
God, I don't think Petrov's relevant enough to be the dumbest human in the world.
Oh, poor Cillian. That's what's going to hurt him worse. Not being named the dumbest person in the world, but hearing you say he's not relevant enough to keep up the title.
Yeah, Cillian, you're pretty dumb, but I didn't really hear anything from you this week. You were kind of anonymous. You need to step up.
Actually, speaking of that, really quickly before we get to West Brom, did you guys hear that the players didn't, all of them refused to speak to the media after the City game?
I didn't.
Yeah, that's why we haven't seen that much about...
I refused to read the media after the City games. Is that factor into this at all? So that explains why I don't know a lot of these answers to the questions we asked at the beginning. So what exactly happened?
They just refused to chat to any of the reporters that were there for the post-match things, which, as far as I know, is kind of part of their job.
That's really, really petty, considering, the only reason was because they were upset because they got hammered by an obviously superior team.
I just wonder about some other things about why, I know specifically they attempted to talk to Bannon. Was Bannon upset because he was on the bench?
Maybe. It doesn't seem he's spent a lot of time on the bench, and I never got the impression that he was going to be a regular starter, so I don't understand why he would be upset that he didn't start this particular match. I mean, I'm upset that he didn't start it, but I don't know. It always strikes me as really petty when players or managers avoid the media, but I mean, yeah, God, you gotta hope they said something, especially considering, I mean, not to revisit the last segment, but Alex McLeish said a number of just unbearably stupid things on Match of the Day. So,
well, I think it's petty. I agree with that, but I wouldn't try to read too much into it because everything we've read said this is the happiest clubhouse ever. So, you know, maybe Barry's a little upset, but I can't see him being irate given everything else we know.
I just think there probably should be some sort of policy in place that despite them being happy and despite them getting hammered, that someone's got to step up and talk to the media.
Accountable, right? This was their first defeat of the season. Someone should be out there saying, I don't know, giving a reason or saying, oh, yeah, we were totally outmatched or something like that.
Or even the false, we've been unbeaten until now, but it's just one defeat and we'll move on and we'll beat the Baggies next week. And even false, annoying pep like that would have been acceptable.
You know, it would have been nice if perhaps our captain had actually gone out and taken a little bit of responsibility.
And then he'd give Gareth more ammunition.
We should have introduced your segment now.
Had a fantastic game.
Did you just say you thought Petrov had a fantastic game?
No, I'm saying that I think Cillian Petrov's quote would be that he had a fantastic game and he was doing really well, but was let down by all his teammates.
He's really relishing his role as a loser. God.
I'm trying to read Kendrick's report here to see if there's anything about them not speaking, but I definitely don't see any quotes. I feel like the coverage of post-game, et cetera, is so different than what I'm used to with North American sports that I have a hard time finding these things to begin with, or at least, good meaty quotes. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like each quote gets its own article and it's like maybe three paragraphs. Does anybody else notice that, or am I just not looking at
it? Yeah, it's like they have so many football pages they have to cover that they spread everything out
right
throughout the week. But normally, normally I think we would see these kind of quotes today, actually. We usually get them on Mondays, but it was pretty late news today.
Well, I agree. I wish someone would have come out and said, just one loss, but we'll beat the Baggies this week. So do we actually think we're going to beat the Baggies this week?
I think we've got it in us to draw.
I do think that I think we could beat West Brom because West Brom is not having an especially good season so far, but being able to beat West Brom is a fair distance from actually being West Brom, and it seems to be this team's MO just to go out there and settle for a point.
All right, so real quick, I did happen to stumble across one thing here right now. I did not say across, by the way. I hate people who say that. I said across. Barry Bannon apparently was rested because of his run through a couple games with Villa and the national team. So he was purposely sat by McLeish. So it's not like he wanted to, I guess, at least that's what he's saying.
That's true. Did he play against Spain or whoever Scotland was playing?
Yeah, he was questionable because of his gash on his heel, but he played, and then they pulled him out when they realized that Spain was going to dismantle Scotland and Barry Bannon's heel could use a rest.
Well, I do, on the bright side of all of that, think it's good that Bannon is, I mean, first of all, starting for his national team, and second of all, starting playing in games against Spain, because, I mean...
So was Alan Hutton, though.
Well, Alan Hutton is not a short, tricky attacking midfielder, so he didn't really have as much to learn.
Oh, okay. So you're saying he had stuff to learn. All right, got it.
Well, hasn't he talked about how his heroes are Iniesta and Xavi?
That makes sense.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't think Alan Hutton, as someone who watched part of that Scotland game, I'm pretty sure Alan Hutton didn't learn anything except, holy shit, I can never go to a Champions League game and participate.
I think Alan Hutton, having seen the highlights of Scotland Spain, I think Alan Hutton would be pretty excited that David Silva didn't start the Manchester City game.
I was excited for that too, but it didn't matter at the end.
Did he get put on at the end? I'm sorry, that's still bothering me.
Yeah, it was strange.
Well, that was the thing. I mean, not to sort of keep revisiting this, but we got beat 4-1 by Manchester City, and they weren't playing David Silva or Sergio Aguero, which are their two best players.
Yeah, let's go back to West Brom.
All right.
So, quick poll. Win, lose, draw. Kirsten, what do you think?
I think draw. I think that City's going to be hanging over their heads.
Gareth?
Yeah, I think we could win, but we're not going to. It's a draw.
Andrew?
I mean, I might lean towards loss. I'm just not that optimistic right now. I don't know. They're going to be a bitch to play against, and it's not going to be fun. So I'll go with draw, but I'm not feeling too good about it.
Out of curiosity, is this at Villa Park or is this?
It is at Villa Park.
Oh, okay,
that helps.
Yeah, I can't see us losing to West Brom at Villa Park. That would be like people would be calling for McLeish's head.
Yes, they would. That would be bad.
Already, I don't know if they are already. I don't really.
Since we're at Villa Park, I think it's a win. I'm gonna go ahead and I'll say 3-1.
Oh, look at that! Look at glass half full over there.
Wow.
So I know everyone's down lately, And this is kind of, I wanted to say again to this a little bit, but you all realize that one win where we had a loss, or a couple of wins where we had draws, and we would be in a Champions League spot.
Yeah, but we have to actually win those games instead of playing for the draw. And I think that's what's actually frustrating me about my attitude right now is that, okay, what was it? We did look like we were actually playing for a win when we played against Wigan. I mean, we scored 2 goals. We didn't just stop. And for QPR, it was just a last-minute own goal that caused the draw. We were still playing to actually win that game. So if the City match hadn't come in and messed things up, I think I would be looking a lot more optimistically toward West Brom, because I think that McLeish was actually moving in a decent direction. Now I'm worried that he's going to panic and shrink right back into that, oh my God, we just have to get a point and play Heskey again.
Yeah, I'm not entirely convinced of McLeish as an attack, an attack-minded manager, or a manager who is interested in winning games. I mean, he does make a point of targeting sort of those lower half teams and actually trying to beat them while settling for a draw against better teams. But especially as part of the hangover from the City game, I can't see any a win happening.
I mean, yeah, I always look at where Newcastle is now, and that's where we probably should be, at least in the table at this point. They obviously, you know, we could have used a win against them.
Yeah.
But they did probably outplay us. I think everybody would kind of agree with that.
I would say, sort of hesitantly say, that I think Newcastle has a better squad than we do.
That's kind of how I feel. And the whole key here, and we talk about, you know, coulda, shouldas, those don't matter really, but we played pretty much the easy part, and now we're going to have to start playing really good teams. And it scares the crap out of me. So the points that we've dropped earlier are going to come back to bite us in the ass, I think, and it's not going to be pretty.
Wait,
with the comparison against with Newcastle, like Newcastle was also in the same boat as we are, or were in the sense that they were undefeated for a number of weeks without being spectacular, but they were playing. They drew against Arsenal and they drew against Tottenham. We haven't had a result like that against a team that's challenging for the title, because we haven't really faced any of them yet. This is the first one, and it went really badly. So,
but in good news, we don't have to do it again just yet, because we've got Sunderland and Norwich next.
Nice. Okay, cool. Well, that's good.
So no panicking yet. We just got to beat some of these teams.
And then after that, we've got Tottenham at Tottenham. But Tottenham has looked so on and off this year that if we catch them on a bad day, there's a chance. And then we get Swansea, and then it's Manchester United, and good God, that'll be terrible. But we have a run of 5 or so winnable or drawable games here. I think we can get points out of all of them.
Really would love to see some wins. I think everybody wants to see 3 points. And just the draws, you know, they're points, and that's fine. But, you know, it just it wears on everybody, and we're all just kind of down about it. Yeah, it's just you can't be drawing these games that you have to win when these huge games
are coming up. These ones we won't win.
Right, the ones we won't win, exactly. And I mean, I guess I don't really know what we're trying to do, because obviously, you know, I don't think we're nearly bad enough to worry about being relegated, but it's probably idiotic to even assume that there's a chance of finishing in the top 6 or 7. So, I mean, I don't know what I expect when I'm saying this. I mean, it's like, this is pretty much it, right?
I think we just have to expect that right now we're clinging on. We want to finish solidly. We do this for a couple of years and then hope to God that we're secure enough financially that we can go back to actually experimenting and playing some decent football that's fun to watch.
Yeah, I think ultimately the reason that I'm not as concerned about relegation as I was last season was that there seems to be an air of stability around the club that wasn't there. Like, it was that the problem was that we were just in crisis mode all of the time, and everyone was always angry about something, and there was drama. But then again, when you take a look at it, I think our team last year was better. Like, we had better players last year than we do this year. Like, we definitely downgraded. So theoretically, we should be more concerned about relegation this year than we were last year. And yet, I don't worry about it at all.
That is a good point.
Change your mind that there seems to be a little less parity this year in the bottom third of the league? I mean, it doesn't feel like anyone below seventh could be anywhere in the table. It feels like there's definitely a bottom tier.
Yeah, I think that's a nice way of saying that the shit teams are a lot more shit than they were last year, which makes me pretty happy.
Except Bolton. I don't think Bolton are really going to stay down there. But
they could. I wouldn't be surprised.
I think having Stuart Holden back will help them some.
But they're not going to get him back at all. He's out for six more months, isn't he?
Yeah, he's dead again.
Wait, yeah. What?
Did yeah, I? Yeah, he got re-injured.
Oh, yeah, bollocks. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's been relegated to FIFA, tweeting about FIFA and thinking about FIFA. He's done.
Tangent. Did anyone see the highlights from the Bolton game, specifically where Nigel Rio-Coker totally claimed an own goal as his own?
Oh, that wasn't actually him that scored it?
I don't think so. I was watching it. I don't know actually who it got credited to, but I'm pretty sure Nigel Rio-Coker didn't score that goal, just because I don't think Nigel Rio-Coker is physically capable of scoring a goal.
I love the reasoning.
Yeah. Well, it seems like he's really enjoying his football out there in Italy.
Yeah. He really does love that Italian football. Bolton.
Catenaccio. So.
Guys, the Stuart Holden news just took it out of me. I feel so badly.
He doesn't even play for our team.
I understand this, and yet I want so badly for things to go well for Lion of Vienna Suite. I have suddenly become an irrational Bolton fan just because of them, and I don't even know them.
Wow, you're special.
That's the thing, and I guess this is a little inside baseball, but has SB Nation had a football blogger whose club has been relegated yet?
No.
No, but this year they've got two with the potential.
Yeah, the Wigan one, right?
Yeah, because we just got the Wigan one.
What? I mean, there's a good chance that one of these, I guess, Sunderland's been down recently, so I guess that wouldn't be that as shocking as it sounds, but Sunderland's right there, Bolton.
I think we're getting a Leeds blog, though.
So, nice.
So I think we're trying to get further down.
I feel like Leeds is a team that I need to see more, because I feel like there's a really good potential for me to strongly hate them more than I already do. They're a really hateable organization.
You know, that's why most people do watch sports, to figure out who they can hate the most.
Doesn't everybody just hate Leeds, even just...
Yeah, I think it's like something you have to overcome. If you want to like them, you actually have to overcome the hatred of Leeds.
I just want to mention that I'm sad that Arsenal's turned it around, because I think Ted would be the greatest championship blogger ever.
Oh, man. His
vitriol would be so amazing.
Oh, I was really sad, actually, when, you know, waking up for Arsenal being on, and then it was like, oh, really? You're going to win? That's really boring. And I think that was the one that was on during Italy. So I'm sitting there going, Arsenal has scored more goals than the stupid Serie A.
The whole league.
Two goals until the late game.
That was bad.
And I was up at 6 a.m. Sorry, I'm done ranting, but that can never happen again.
Next week, we'll bring you the new Kirsten segment, Stupidest League in the World.
Last week it was Italy, because I was up too early for that nonsense. Didn't help the Napoli loss the day before. Okay, I'm done.
Well, that's lovely. Alrighty. Well, do you guys have any final comments before we wrap this all up?
I'm just interested in knowing who the stupidest, dumbest? Is it dumbest or stupidest?
I'm varying it. I want it to feel organic.
Okay. Alright, well... I'm just looking forward to knowing whoever that person is next week.
I think all four of us should come up with our own soapbox segment.
Yes, and mine will definitely be which league pissed me off this week.
I think I'll bring you the why the glass is half full segment, since I seem to be the only optimist on the site.
Hey, he's got to be someone, right?
Starry-eyed and always thinking that we might win. Alrighty. Well, you guys got nothing else? Because if not, we'll wrap this up and come back next week or so We good with that?
Yep, as long as this actually recorded. Cross your fingers, everyone.
Fingers crossed. So, and hopefully we'll be able to hear more than just Kirsten, although it's not bad when that's all you get to hear.
Hey, I got new fans because of that. Hi, everyone.
Did you really?
Yeah.
We should start a fan club. We'll get you scarves and everything.
It's fine by me.
You're going to have to knit them.
Oh. That cuts into my typing.
Sorry, I forgot to tell you that part.
Damn.
All right. Well, that's it for the second episode of the 7500 to Holt podcast. We will be back sometime in the next week or so. So this has been Anders Cieslak.
See ya.
And Garrett Simpson.
Yeah. Good night.
And Kirsten Schlewitz.
Bye-bye.
And me, Robert Lintott. We'll see you sometime soon. Take care.